Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 8 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for spring pre-registration is April 21st. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we'll meet an artist who makes music using his own brainwaves. But first, it just got warm here in Iowa, and already some farm fields are greening up thanks to cover crops. This hour, I'm going to talk with farmers Doug Adams and Carmen Black about how they use cover crops. We'll also talk about spring planting and how it differs between a conventional corn and soybean farm and a vegetable farm. Doug Adams is on the line with me from Humboldt, Iowa. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Charity. How's it going today?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
And thank you.
Give me a rundown of your operation. Tell me about your farm.
Well, we farm in southwest Humboldt County, corn and soybeans. It's a sixth-generation family farm, and I farm with my wife, Kim, and we also farm with a neighbor, and we do no-till, strip-till, and cover crops. We have a little bit of ground in northern Webster County, and with our strip-till and no-till, we decided to add the cover crops to help boost our soil health.
All right, and how many acres do you farm?
I have about 1,000 of my own right now, so...
All right, a big operation. And Carmen Black is also here with a very different operation. She runs a community-supported agriculture vegetable farm north of Solon. It's called Sundog Farm, and her CSA is called Local Harvest. Hello, Carmen.
Hello.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
And tell us about your farm.
Yeah, so I farm in northern Johnson County, and my farm is 40 acres, but I primarily farm vegetables on just around 8. And so I do community supported agriculture, which is the idea that you customers will sign up at the beginning of a season and pay upfront or in installments. And then they receive a weekly share of whatever's in season. So we have a pretty long season. We start delivering actually at the end of April this month.
Wow. Soon.
Soon, yes, hopefully. And until Thanksgiving. And so we grow just a lot of different kinds of vegetables to keep it interesting and, to provide just like fresh, healthy vegetables for our community.
All right. And you use organic practices, although you're not organic certified.
Correct. Right? Yes. Yes. And we also have a sheep flock as well.
All right. So. Sheep, too. Do they take up those other acres?
They do. They do.
All right. Well, Doug, I would love to hear from you. When did you first start using cover crops?
So it was the fall of 2012. We were just starting to learn about cover crops, and so I thought, what a better way to learn than to try it myself. In addition to my farming operation, I'm a soil conservation technician at the Humboldt NRCS office. And so I figured we'll probably be talking to farmers about cover crops, and I thought now's a good time to try it. On the farm, you only get one chance a year to usually try something new.
And for people who are not familiar, I mean, a lot of us are starting to see cover crops. This practice is growing in Iowa, but explain what a cover crop is.
So a cover crop is a crop that we're planting in our fields and not planning on harvesting for a grain like we typically do with our corn and soybeans. The cover crop is typically grown in the time of year that our cash crop is not growing. So usually what we do is we'll fly in our cereal rye when the beans are just starting to drop their leaves is probably the best time to time that. And so the cereal rye gets started growing as my cash crop is ripening, and then it grows pretty much all winter long. So even though we do get pretty cold, a lot of times you can go out in your fields, and on sunny days you'll see those cover crops kind of green up during the winter months. And the main purpose of the cover crop is to, I like to use it to recycle my nutrients. So not all the nutrients that are out in our fields are being used by our cash crop, and we don't want those leaching away with the groundwater or else, you know, blowing away with the topsoil. So we grow the cover crops to help, they'll take those up, and then as those cover crops are terminated in the spring, they'll return as organic matter back to our soil to help boost our soil health.
All right, so really it's kind of a natural fertilizer, and it protects your soil. So it's protecting your soil from having the nutrients leached away, but it's also keeping your soil where it is, right?
Yeah, our topsoil, you know, we build topsoil at such a slow rate. We really need to manage it as a non-renewable resource because it takes, you know, like 500 years to gain an inch of soil. So it's something that we don't want to see disappear. And if we can do things to improve our soil health, that's even better.
You said it grows until it's terminated. So how do you terminate your cover crop?
So with most of my cover crops, I'm using cereal rye, and it's ahead of both my corn and my soybeans. And so there's two options to terminating it. If it's early in the season, we're typically using herbicide like a glyphosate to terminate that cover crop. And if it's later on, when the cereal rye is actually going through anthesis, when it's pollinating, we have terminated it by rolling and crimping it. And that's, I did about 200 acres 2 years ago. I crimped 200 acres of cereal rye into my soybean crops.
Okay. And you're rolling and crimping. Does that actually work it into the soil, or is it just on top mostly?
No, it's just on top. So the crimper, actually what it does is, as it states, it'll crimp the stem. And so you want the stem crimped in about three or four places. And so the big roller we use, the year we used it, we had a 20-foot wide roller. And now they've got 30-foot wide rollers. We're able to rent those through Gary Knave has a shop here in town that he rents rollers across the state as well as scrapers. And so it was something that once the rye got to that stage, we knew we could try crimping it, and that saved on our herbicide costs. So the crimper just pretty much rolls over it and leaves that straw mulch laying on the surface of our soil, and it ends up being about 2 to 3 inches of straw mulch across the whole farm.
Okay, and let's turn to you, Carmen, because again, you run a very different kind of farm. You're also using cover crops. Tell me how long you've been using cover crops.
Yeah, so I actually purchased my farm and business from a retiring farmer, and so who I worked for several years before I took over. And so she was already using cover crops. So I had the great opportunity to be mentored and sort of inherit some practices that I've been able to continue. And I've gotten even more excited and kind of experimented beyond that. So I've been using cover crops since the beginning, so several years now. And I think that I have a lot of opportunity growing a lot of different crops because in corn and soy operation like Doug's, there's fewer harvest windows with fewer crops. But because I grow so many different kinds of vegetables, I'm harvesting all the time. And so I actually like to plant. I have plant cover crops in the spring before fall crops. So I've already planted some oats and peas this year, which is exciting. And then I will start planting after I harvest stuff, usually in early July is when we first harvest our garlic.
All right. And what, give me an idea of the different kinds of cover crops that you use in your operation. Doug had mentioned cereal rye, which is a pretty popular one. What cover crops do you like?
Yeah. So cereal rye is definitely a good standard because, like Doug said, it stays alive in the winter. And I think that a good thing to remember is living roots in the ground is really important, like he said, for not leaching away nutrients and that kind of thing. So having those living roots over the winter is really great. And it also is one of the only things you can get established in fall, especially late fall. So I definitely use that after the majority of my stuff, whatever I can in the fall. But I love the opportunity to do stuff at other times of year, too.
All right. And again, cover crops, that's not your main goal. Obviously, mm-hmm. you want this ground for growing your main crops. Doug talked about termination. I suspect you have a pretty different approach to termination. So tell me how you terminate your cover crops.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I love about cover crops is it provides additional opportunity for grazing. So like I said, I mentioned that I have sheep. So I actually use portable electric fencing to move my sheep around my vegetable fields when they have a cover crop on them. And this allows them to spread their own manure for me, which, you know, adds
makes the process a little easier.
And,
sure.
Yeah. And also adds additional nutrients to the soil. And that also, if I use the sheep to graze the cover crop's pretty short, it's easier to till in, which is the majority of the way that I terminate without herbicides or without the a roller crimper, which I think is great. But on my scale, I don't have a roller crimper.
Right, so. Right. And it would maybe be a little harder to rent one for 8 acres.
Yeah.
So, Doug, what do you feel the main benefit has been on your farm from these cover crops? What do you feel you're really getting out of it?
Well, the monetary goal is what everybody's looking at. You know, what can we do to get these cover crops to pay? And so for me, what I can see is it reduces the need for herbicide later on in the summertime. If I get a good cover crop established and get that good mulch on the soil surface, it will really reduce the need for spraying late season for like my water hemp. A lot of people have water hemp issues, and the cover crop really seems to help reduce the need for spraying later in the season. But it also provides really good soil health benefits as well, but those are just harder to put a monetary value on it. So I'd say most of it's the weed and herbicide reduction that I don't need to spray for.
Are there any liabilities?
Well, some of the issues, you know, with cover crops, people are concerned, are they going to use too much water? But that's something we can pretty much handle with terminating. In our part of the state, north central Iowa, typically we get plenty of moisture, and so we're actually wanting the cover crop to use the moisture before we get in the field. So I like to use that cover crop to actually grow the moisture out of my ground. In addition to the drainage tile that I do have, I don't have enough, so the cover crop actually helps dry the fields out in the spring.
Yeah, but particularly good this spring, huh?
Yeah, but if we got into a dry spring, you know, it would be something that we'd want to terminate it earlier. And especially as you go west, people are more prone to watching for, you know, moisture stresses and stuff.
So. Sure. I can imagine some farmers feeling nervous about adding to their workload. I mean, you're planting another crop. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, you know, people are concerned about it, but really it's pretty easy. When I first started, I called a seed dealer, and he delivered the seed to the co-op, and then the co-op spread it with some fertilizer that fall. And so we did that after harvest, but after I saw that, you know, I lost some good growing days by waiting till after harvest, then I've been starting to fly it on with an airplane or else with a high-clearance sprayer, they spread that out in the field. And so most of it, you know, all it really takes is picking up the phone and making a call.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about cover crops right now on both a conventional corn and soybean farm and a vegetable farm as well. With me, farmers Doug Adams and Carmen Black. We'll be back in just a moment. You're welcome to join with your questions at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up later this hour, we'll meet an artist who uses his brainwaves directly to make music with an EEG. We'll find out more about that in a few minutes. With me right now, though, I've got a couple of farmers with very different operations, and we're getting a lesson in cover crops, Cover Crops 101 right now. I've got Doug Adams on the line with me from Humboldt, Iowa. He is a conventional corn and soybean farmer. Carmen Black is here with me. She runs a community-supported agriculture vegetable farm north of Solon. It's called Sundog Farm, and her CASA is Local Harvest. They both use cover crops on their farms. And Carmen, now I'm going to ask you all the same questions I just asked Doug. What are the benefits of cover crops for you? What do you get out of this?
Yeah, I think echoing a lot of what Doug already said, it really benefits the soil. One of the important parts of cover crops for me is when I till it in to, as Doug said, terminate the cover crop, I return a lot of organic matter to the soil, which is great for a lot of reasons. It also really benefits the crops. Doug was mentioning about reducing herbicides because you can actually use cover crops to kind of reduce weed pressure. And that's a big thing for me as an organic farmer. I use organic practices. It's very important to find ways to do that.
Right. You've got to choke out the weeds or pull the weeds.
Right.
You don't have a whole lot of options in your arsenal there, right?
Right, right. So cover crops are a big piece of that puzzle for me. Because I grow a lot of crops, it's very important for me to have a big crop rotation, which means that I'm moving the different vegetables around the farm every every year. So they're on different soil than they were the year before. And so cover crops can add some diversity to that as well, which, and one of the big reasons for crop rotation is to reduce your disease and pests, which you can have a lot of different ones when you grow a lot of different crops.
Absolutely. And every horticulture day we end up talking about the need, especially to move tomatoes around. So there's a lot of pressure on your farm to mm-hmm. move things.
Right. Yeah. We have different things for every crop that we grow. And so the cover crops, I think, can help with all of that. I have seen that. I feel like I've had fewer problems as I increase my crop rotation and use more cover crops. And then also a big benefit for me, sort of one of the economic pieces, like Doug was talking about, is with my livestock, I'm able to use it as additional forage for them. And I finish lambs, which means I get them up to weight and sell them directly to people. And so having additional forage at that stage is really helpful.
All right. And Doug, I want to go back to you for just a moment, because Carmen's talking about the weed control benefits of cover crops. And you mentioned water hemp being a problem for you. And that's an herbicide resistant weed, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's tough to kill, so we have to, you know, use different herbicides to try to take care of it. And those herbicides aren't cheap. Usually, those herbicides usually at least account for what I either have in the seed of my cover crop or the application. So typically, I'm looking at about $30 an acre to have the cover crop flown on, the seed end, and the crop itself. So it's about half the application cost and half of it's the seed cost. So, you know, like I said, that's the one of the monetary ways that I can see that I'm getting a benefit, because if I can offset a herbicide cost with the cost of my cover crop, I know the cover crop's giving me other benefits besides weed control. So,
right. And do you find that you do have to spray significantly less because of the cover crops?
Yeah, even, you know, the fields that have the cover crops, you know, they may not be 100% weed-free, but the fields that I'd use my herbicide program on, I'm still having weed escapes and stuff. So, you know, the fields that if I can get a really good cover crop on them, I typically don't have to spray, and I can just take care of, Carmen said, you know, just going out and pulling those weeds is pretty easy when you're out scouting for aphids late in the season, because that cover crop has done a really good job of holding back most of the trouble issues. The herbicide that we use, I like to use a pre-emerge herbicide, and that's usually applied with my burn down if I am doing a burn down. And what that does is that helps hold down the weeds that are in the open areas where the cover crop wasn't as thick. So,
and what do you mean by burn down?
Oh, the burn down is like our glyphosate that we use to kill the cover crops before we start planting or right after we plant the beans and stuff. So,
okay.
That burn down is what we call it. It'll kill all the weeds that are growing. So we choose our herbicides based on what weeds we have growing. Typically, they're, you know, grass based or broadleaf based weeds, and so we just kind of mix up our herbicides based on what we're finding for weeds out there.
And Carmen, tell me about any liabilities with your cover crops. You talked about a lot of different benefits, and they sound like they're incredibly beneficial on your farm. Are there problems, too?
Yeah, I mean, for me, getting the cover crop established is sometimes difficult. And because I like to experiment with different kinds, sometimes the seed can be a little bit expensive, especially for something that you're not directly harvesting.
Right. And I think there was even a seed shortage with cereal rye last fall, if I remember. So,
yeah, I mean, which is great because it means a lot of people are planting it, which I think is really good for Iowa. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so one of the things for me is just being concerned if I'm going to get a good stand, if I'm going to get it well established and it's going to do what I want it to do. So, for example, last fall, I managed to plant some cereal rye right before it rained for 4 weeks. And so at first I was like, great, it's going to get rained in. And then it kept getting rain. And so I didn't get I didn't germinate quite as I wanted it to. And I heard that this happened to people in different parts of the state as well, because it really was wet last fall.
Sure.
So I think that that kind of is a little bit of a financial liability. However, I did get some, and it survived the winter, and it looks beautiful right now. So
is this something that when you're talking, I know there's so much that goes into your operation. When you're talking with other farmers with similar operations, is this something that you find yourself sharing experience and wisdom on a lot? Is the realm of cover crop knowledge really growing?
Yeah, I think that it's something that farmers are increasingly excited about. And I know that I do on-farm research with Practical Farmers of Iowa, which is a farmer organization in Iowa. And it's something that a lot of PFI farmers are excited about and doing research on. And so I think we're able to collectively expand our knowledge, both in sort of farms like Doug's and farms like mine.
And Doug, tell me about your farmer friends. Do you feel like people are open to the idea of cover crops? Are you seeing this growing?
Yeah, I'm actually been doing quite a few talks across the state. Just was up to Sheldon a week or so ago talking to four counties up in far northwest Iowa. And we had a really good crowd. I think 90-some farmers were there wanting to learn more about cover crops. Seemed like several of them were trying cover crops on their own farm. A lot of them were doing no-till. So there's also on Twitter. I'm on Twitter. FarmerDoug93 is my handle on Twitter. And we share a lot of information back and forth about cover crops there. So almost all the farm magazines you pick up, you'll read articles about soil health and cover crops. So there's definitely a lot of interest out there. But, you know, as farmers, we're kind of slower to adopt big changes in our operation, and adding cover crops is a really big change. Like I said, it costs about $30 an acre. So, you know, over all your acres, that's a pretty big check to write out that you're not actually harvesting a crop for. And so it's kind of a leap of faith to go out there and try it on your whole operation. But what we encourage is people just to try it on a few acres, you know, start getting comfortable with it. Through the NRCS office, we've got cost share programs too. And so, you know, that's a good way to offset those startup, you know, trying to figure out how this is going to work in your operation. So
interesting. Well, I want to shift the conversation a little bit. We've been talking about cover crops with Doug Adams, who farms near Humboldt, Iowa. He is a corn and soybean farmer, and Carmen Black, who runs a community-supported agriculture vegetable farm north of Solon called Sundog Farm. Her CSA is Local Harvest. And let's shift gears a little bit because it's spring, and we're all excited about planting this time of year. And Carmen, this time I'm going to let you go first. You said that your CSA shares actually start at the end of April, so you've been planting for a while. Tell me what you've already planted.
Yeah, so I have two high tunnels, which are, you know, hoop house structures with plastic on them that allow us to extend the season. So I have a lot of different greens, lettuce, bok choy, different kinds of cooking greens, kale, that will be coming out of there for the spring share. So I've been doing a lot of that.
Now, when did you start planting?
Well, we were supposed to start in our greenhouse in February, but if you remember, it was still very
horrible.
Cold.
I totally remember.
So we got a little bit of a late start in the greenhouse this year, just waiting for it to warm up a little bit. But we have been planting since the end of February.
All right. And what are you thinking about or planting right now?
Yeah. So we're finally starting to get into the field, which is very exciting. So we've already direct seeded. So put seeds directly in the ground for peas, spinach, radishes, turnips. We're getting ready to do some carrots and flowers. And we will also start transplanting soon. So that's also really exciting. So things like broccoli, kale, collards, kohlrabi, that could start.
So you have all those starts in your greenhouses or your hoop houses as well?
Yes. Yeah. Getting, we're close to ready on those.
All right. And what do you look for? I mean, spring is pretty fickle in Iowa. What are the signs that tell you that it's okay to get out there in the fields and plant?
Yeah. So I've been really studying the weather. And also you want to monitor the soil temperature a little bit. So some things can withstand colder temperatures. Some things can even withstand a little snow. Last year, I planted some Napa cabbage, got snowed on, and was still fine. So you just got to kind of, that's the challenge about growing so many different kinds of crops, is kind of knowing each one and really paying attention to the weather.
Well, I can imagine there's a benefit to growing so many different kinds of crops as well, because every year things happen, I can imagine that even if you have one crop fail, that doesn't necessarily mean that your other crops would fail. Is that an experience that you've had?
Yeah, totally. That's one of the real advantages of growing a lot of different things, I think, is you spread it out a little bit. So if you have a challenge, hopefully other things go well.
Absolutely. Well, last year you had good tomatoes, and I know that other farmers in the area did not. So you actually set up an exchange with another CSA to give them tomatoes, and you got potatoes in return?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did that mean you had problems with potatoes?
It was one of my first seasons growing potatoes, actually. So we did okay, but, you know, we knew it wasn't going to be everything.
All right. And Doug, what are you thinking about this time of year? It's your cover crop is greening up. It's gotten warm, but you have some constraints on when you can start planting, right?
Yeah, that's one of the benefits. You know, as a farmer, any farmer, you know, we enjoy seeing the fields green up. And so that's one of the nice things about cover crops is they green up in the fall as well as early in the spring like this.
So, so it feels like progress.
Enjoy... Yeah. We enjoy seeing those new things grow. And so right now, you know, we're definitely getting the equipment ready, getting our sprayers ready because, you know, as with our no-till operation, we're going to be spraying that burn-down pass, you know, right as we're getting ready to plant the fields. And like Carmen said, we monitor the soil temps as well as the weather forecast. So right now, you know, they're kind of talking a chance of pretty good snows here late this week. And soil temps are warming up and drying up. But we're definitely probably probably at least 2 weeks away from getting in the fields up here.
Well, and aren't there restrictions based on crop insurance as well about when you can plant?
Yeah, that's one of the challenges is with crop insurance. It's broken up in the state. The western part of the state, they want you to terminate your cover crops at planting time or before. And then Humboldt County, we're kind of right on the line. Anything east of us is pretty much you need to terminate your cover crops within 5 days of planting your cash crop. So like when I crimped that cereal rye, I was crimping it right after we planted the cash crop of our soybeans. And so that works okay for crop insurance. But the other thing Carmen talked about was crop diversity. And, you know, with my cover crop growing out there, you know, if we do have a challenging spring, I look at that cover crop as a possible cash crop. I need to figure out a little bit more about the management of that cover crop to grow it as a cash crop. But I have toyed with playing in some test strips of harvesting the cereal rye over the top of the soybeans. So I'll actually allow the rye to continue to grow and come in and harvest that cereal rye in July. And so that's one of the things, you know, you talked earlier about, you know, the cost of cereal rye seed sometimes going up because the supply isn't there. And that's one thing that we're thinking about here in Iowa is if more farmers are going to do cover crops, how can we supply that market? And hopefully we can use it by adding those small grain crops to our cash crops of corn and soybeans. And that'll help give us more diversity, which helps break the disease cycle. So, you know, even though we have different farming operations, we still think the same. You know, how can we improve our profitability over the whole farm?
So this time of year, when you can't quite get out and do anything, what do you find yourself doing during the day? What do you spend your days on?
Well, you know, I have the off-farm job, so that keeps me pretty busy. I work at the NRCS office helping farmers with their conservation plans and spreading the good news of soil health around to different groups. But the other farmers, they're definitely out working on equipment, getting planters prepared for going to the field. You know, we have quite a bit of investment in our equipment and our operations, and it takes quite a bit of maintenance. We want to make sure that when the weather is good, that we're not we didn't oversee something that maybe was ready to break or had broke last year. And so everybody's going over their equipment with a fine-tooth comb, changing oil in the tractors, checking the filters, and getting everything ready to go.
Do you find yourself obsessing about the weather forecast a little bit?
Yeah, you know, when they're talking cold and snow, you know, you just kind of like, that's not going to be any fun. And I know last year when we had the snow, it really seemed to change our soil. North of Highway 20, we had quite a bit of snow in April, and it just seems like the soil got really cold and mucky and was hard to get to come into shape for us. And then, you know, with the continued wet weather, just really didn't end up being a really good growing season for us last year. But So, you know, we're just hoping 2018, everybody was glad to see that one go in the rearview mirror, but it kind of seems like we're having a little bit of a hangover, and it's coming over into 2019, and hopefully we get over this soon and the weather straightens out.
And, Carmen, you were nodding your head when I mentioned obsessively watching the weather forecast. That's pretty much an occupational hazard in your line of work, isn't it?
Yes, I think so.
So when you are obsessively checking the weather forecast, what are your big fears this time of year?
Yeah, I mean, echoing what Doug said, the snow in April last year was challenging. For us, we planted peas in late March last year, and they got snowed on 4 times, but they still came up. So, I mean, seeds are pretty amazing, I guess, is one takeaway. But, yeah, looking for that precipitation windows that we can work up the ground and plant because we have so many early crops we can get in.
Well, and also you're a CSA farmer. You're selling directly to consumers. So is marketing and connecting with consumers a big part of what you do this time of year as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, spring just feels like so quick because there's so much to do. We're out in the field, we're getting outside, but also we need to be really focusing on meeting customers.
All right. Well, Carmen Black, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Carmen Black runs a community-supported agriculture vegetable farm north of Solon. It's called Sundog Farm, and her CSA is Local Harvest, and there are still spots available this year. Doug Adams, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much. This was fun.
Doug Adams farms near Humboldt, Iowa. He's a conventional corn and soybean farmer. We were talking this hour mostly about cover crops, but also spring planting. Coming up in just a moment, we'll meet an artist who makes live music in a weird and wonderful way. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.